Fish.
My special gratitude to His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj, Her Grace Mandakini Devi, and Her Grace Kamagiri Devi for their sincere words of enlightenment, encouragement, and inspiration. There is a well-known story Srila Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan. It was in 1976, I believe. And they were building a place where Srila Prabhupada was going to be invited to translate his books. Srila Prabhupada would be very encouraging to everyone, everywhere, wherever he went, as long as he saw the devotees were honestly and sincerely trying to serve. So he said that he would like to retire at New Vrindavan and write his books there. So the devotees started building a special house for him. And Prabhupada came and he was walking around with some of the leaders of the society from all over America. And it was just a construction site, just cement, and that's about all. And he said, "When you finish, I will come here and write my books, and I will reside here." And one devotee, he said, "Srila Prabhupada, according to Krishna book, it describes that in the heavenly planets and in Krishna's palaces, there was no need for lights, that everything was lit up by jewels." And he said, "They're building a palace for you here. Will it be lit by jewels?" And Srila Prabhupada, he took his cane and waved it toward the devotees, all the devotees, the leaders, the people who were working construction, the gardeners, the book distributors, the pujaris. Prabhupada said, "My devotees are my jewels." And they will light up the whole world. In the story of these three devotees that have spoken, they all went through much challenges and hardships. We heard just a little drop from the ocean of Mandakini Devi's pastimes in Russia in the service of her guru. In the story of Sripad Madhvacharya, there's a beautiful incident that highlights this principle. After Sripad Madhvacharya was coming down from Badrikashram on the banks of the Godavari River in the Kalinga area, he was preaching. And there was one particular person, his name was Sami Shastri. His father was very highly posted under the king of the Kalinga province. He was a nobleman. He had wealth. He had very, very significant services for the royalty. His son was quite young, but he was totally immersed in the scriptures, trying to understand what is the highest truth and how to live by that highest truth. He became a great scholar. So when Madhvacharya was there, upon hearing Shripad Madhvacharya speaking, Swami Shastri surrendered his life to him. He wanted to renounce the world and become a sannyasi and just spread pure bhakti according to Shripad Madhvacharya's teachings. So he left the kingdom and came back toward Udupi with Shripad Madhvacharya. His guru gave him, Shripad Madhvacharya, a very extraordinary instruction. He initiated him. He became a sannyasi. His name was Narahari Tirtha, one of the most famous, powerful leaders in the disciplic succession of the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. So Narahari Tirtha was told by Shripad Madhvacharya that in the treasury house, where the most priceless treasures of the king are held, is a deity. I would like you to bring those deities to me. But in order to get the deities, you may have to become the king and rule over the kingdom. And he told the story of the deities and why they were so dear to Madhvacharya. Srila Prabhupada, he summarizes the story in the Madhya Lila of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. These deities, Srila Prabhupada explains, well, Prabhupada tells this story, that when Ram was living in Ayodhya, Lord Ram, there was one very, very great devotee. He loved Ram so much that he made a vow that until he has the darshan of Lord Sri Ramchandra, he would not drink any water or eat any food. And he was an elderly person. So sometimes Lord Ramchandra, because this is when he was the king, after he returned to Ayodhya from his 14 years in exile, he would sit on the throne, he would give his darshan to all the people. But sometimes Lord Ramchandra would leave for some time. And one time he was away for 8 days. And this old man fasted for 8 days. So when Ramchandra came and sat on his throne and was giving his darshan to everybody, this old man, he was really weak. He was practically dying. So Ram told Lakshman that there is a deity of myself that is none different than me. You should give that deity to this man. And then he can worship the deity at home, and when I'm away, he could see me. And then he could eat. The history of that deity, it was, or he was, long ago worshipped by Lord Brahma. Brahma presented it to the great kings of the solar dynasty. Maharaj Ikshvaku worshipped that murti of Sitaram in his abode. And as the generations passed and all the great kings of the Raghu dynasty, that was their Ishtadev, that deity of Mularam, which is the name the followers of Sripad Madhvacharya call, was given to King Dasarath, and he worshipped the Murti of Ram even before Ram was born. And when Dasarath Maharaj departed from this world, and Ram, Lakshman, and Sita returned to Ayodhya after their exile and after the conquering of Ravana, they came back with Hanumanji and so many other wonderful devotees. Lakshman was personally worshiping that deity of Ram. So Ram told Lakshman, give this old Brahmin the deity. And that way, if I'm not here, he can have darshan of me and the deity, and he could eat nicely. So this deity that was handed down from the time of Brahma, Ikshvaku, Dasarath, Lakshman, was now worshipped by the Brahmin every day with great love and devotion. After some years, before the Brahmin departed from this world, he presented his life and soul, Mularam, back to Lakshman. And Ram told Lakshman, give my form to Hanumanji. And Hanuman was so ecstatic. He wore the deity of Mularam around his neck. It hung over his heart for years and years and years. Not only years, but for an entire yuga. He kept that Mularam on his chest. We know the story of Hanumanji. When he was in Ayodhya once, he saw Sita putting on this red sindoor in the part where her hair was combed in both directions. And Hanumanji's a brahmachari. He doesn't know all the intricacies of why ladies do what they do. So he asked, why are you doing like that? And Sita said, because it pleases my beloved Ram. So the next day, from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head was a thick layer of this. And Ram said, what are you doing? He said, Sita says that putting this on pleases you. I want to please you. So that was Hanuman's devotion. Some said the Hari Toshanam. He wanted to please Lord Hari. And once when Ram was in separation and he was crying out for Ram because Ram was not there, a devotee asked Hanumanji, why are you crying out for Ram? He said, because I want to see Ram. I'm feeling so much separation from Ram. Where is Ram? And they said, Ram is always in your heart. Hanuman was so enthusiastic. He wanted to see Ram so much that he, with his nails, he ripped open his chest. And there was his heart. And he ripped open his heart. Now, if an ordinary person does that, what is their fate? But because Hanuman was completely transcendental to anything except the loving service of the Lord, Krishna tells in Gita that for my devotees, I carry what they have, and I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. So he ripped open his heart and he looked, and there was Ram and Sita personally, physically giving their darshan within his heart. And he was happy. Yes, they are in my heart. And he put everything back nicely. So now this murti of Mularam and Sita was in the heart of Ram. Hanuman is wearing on a string around his neck over his heart. It was his Ishtadev. In Mahabharata, we find the story when Draupadi asked Bhima to collect some flowers for her in the Himalayas. And he came upon this big elderly monkey who was in the path. And his tail was blocking the pathway. So Bhima Sena, he's a very powerful person. He said, please move your tail. Monkey said, I'm very old and I'm very tired. I really can't move it. You can move it. So Bhima, he couldn't lift the tail. And then he realized that he was his brother. This was Hanumanji. And at that time, Hanuman was so pleased with Bhima, he blessed Bhima. And what's the greatest blessing you could give to someone? To give them Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explained among ourselves as brothers and sisters in a God family, the greatest service we can do for each other is to remind each other of Krishna, to enthuse each other to serve Krishna, to help connect our hearts together with Krishna. So Hanumanji gave Bhima the murti of Mularam that had been worshipped from the time of Brahma toward the beginning of creation. The last king of the Pandava dynasty presented that murti of Mularam to the Gajapati kings of Orissa, who were then ruling over the Kalinga province near Andhra Pradesh. And those kings, it was the treasure of all treasures. So they kept the murti where they had the most valuable assets of the kingdom. Sripad Madhvacharya told his disciple Narahari Tirtha that as the son of Vayu, as Hanuman, I worship that deity. As Bhima, I worship that deity. I want to worship that deity. Bring Sri Ram to me. So Narahari Tirtha, instead of coming back, staying in Udupi with all the other sannyasis and doing pujas and doing preaching, he went back to the kingdom of Kalinga. And there he was just preaching Bhagavad Dharma, pure devotional service. Teaching everyone and anyone who would come anywhere in his association, directly or indirectly, that the soul is eternal. And the nature of the soul is it's an eternal servant of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. God is a person, but he's the all-attractive Supreme Person. And the ultimate aspiration of every soul is to serve that Supreme Person with love. And he was explaining on the basis of so much logic, philosophy, and especially of the Holy Scriptures, how this was the conclusion, the Siddhanta. Everyone loved him. Not only because he preached so well, but because of his character. His conduct, he was so respectful, he was so humble, he was so gracious, compassionate, self-controlled. He had dignity and integrity in whatever he did. So people, because of his life, they honored what he said. the king honored him as a saint. But then the king died. And the king had a son who was just an infant. So the infant couldn't rule the kingdom. So now who's going to rule the kingdom? It was a big dilemma. But the ministers, they loved this Narahari Tirtha so much. If anyone could rule over us, it's him. We all have such faith and confidence in everything he says, and he has such integrity, and he treats everyone like his own children, even though he was quite young at the time himself. So they had a tradition that there was an elephant, and the elephant had a garland of victory, and whoever the elephant gave that garland of victory to would be the next king. Usually the elephant just went up to the son of the king and put it on him. That was the tradition. But now the son was an infant baby. He couldn't do anything. So the elephant walked right up to Narahari Tirtha and placed the garland around him. And they pleaded of them, please be our king. He's living as a sannyasi. He's studying scriptures, he's preaching, he doesn't have anything to do with political matters. But Madhvacharya actually told him that in order to get these deities for me, you're going to have to become the king. So he became the king. For many years, he was ruling. If you go to Kurukshetra, which is in Andhra Pradesh, it's one of the first places that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is recorded to have stopped at during his South Indian tour. That is where he met the Kurma Brahman. And inscribed within the wall of the temple is the histories there. And it refers to Narahari Tirtha, who was the king. Because at one time, there was some very, very violent, irreligious people who attacked the temple of Kurmadev. And Narahari Tirtha led an army to save the temple, to save the deities, to save the devotees, to save Dharma. When you have to be a king, it's not that you just do it the way you like to do it. He had to fight wars. He had to tax citizens. But he did everything with pure dharma, pure integrity. And he never deviated from his consciousness of being a sannyasi. Srila Prabhupada taught us from Rupa Goswami the concept of yukta vairagya. That sometimes, according to time, place, and circumstance, in the service of Krishna, we have to do the needful. Even Srila Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue in New York, some of his devotees were going to get married. Mukunda Prabhu, now he's Goswami Maharaj, and Janaki Devi. They were the first devotees in our society to get married. Now, nobody knew how to do a fire yagya. So Prabhupada did the fire yagya. He said, sannyasis never do fire yagyas for marriages. But what to do? In order to establish his movement, he did. He did so many things out of necessity, out of compassion, in the service of his guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, who told him to spread this message throughout the world. So Narahari Tirtha, for about between 12 and 15 years, he ruled over Kalinga as the king.
sannyasi king. He was gentle, he was humble like a blade of grass, but he was the king.
So when the child, who was the rightful heir, grew up, so he was old enough, immediately Narahari Tirtha said, "You take the kingdom." "I don't want it. I was just doing it as service to my Guru Maharaj and service to all of you." So the boy who now was coronated king, he said, "I want to give you a gift. You sustained the legacy of our dynasty for all these years when there was no one else, and you did it with such dignity, and you expanded our empire. I want to give you a gift. What can I give you? I'll give you everything, anything." Narahari Tirtha said, "In your treasury, there is a deity of Mularam. Just give me the deity." They gave him the deity. That was the whole reason why he ruled over this kingdom for 15 years, is just to serve his Guru Maharaj by bringing that deity to him, because he knew this would please him. This is the consciousness of a devotee. Hanumanji, we were in Kishkindha Kshetra discussing, he was jumping over oceans. He was facing Ravana's entire army single-handedly just to please Ram. And Hanuman, what was his ultimate pleasure? When he could go back to Ram and present the jewel of Sita to Ram. In a similar way, he went, and for 15 years approximately, he ruled over a kingdom, and when, you know, all of the challenges and sacrifices he went through, and he had the jewel of Mularam. Everything was worth it just to please his guru. And he came back to Udupi all those years later and presented him to Sri Padmadvacharya. It's described, it was just in the time of Kartik. And Sri Padmadvacharya, that morning, he was especially blissful. And they said, "Why? Well, you're always blissful, but today you're really blissful." He said, "Because today my worshipable Lord is going to come to me, Mularam." And sure enough, Narahari Tirtha arrived after being away for so long and presented Sri Ram in his beautiful form, Sitaram, to Madhvacharya. Sri Padmadvacharya embraced his disciple as his disciple was offering his full obeisances on the floor, and Madhvacharya picked him up and embraced him. And tears of gratitude, tears of happiness. He installed the deity, had a beautiful abhishek, had beautiful yajna, beautiful kirtan of the holy name to celebrate the coming of his Lord. And soon after that, Sri Madhvacharya departed from this world. But before he did, he presented that deity back to Narahari Tirtha to worship. And there is a mat, an ashram, in the area of South India where that deity is still worshipped today by the descendants of Narahari Tirtha and Sri Padmadvacharya. An example of how a person who is inspired by the love of a Vaishnav can
endure such challenges with gratitude if it pleases their Guru and Krishna. That is what Srila Prabhupada did for his Guru. That is what people like Mandakini Devi had done for her Guru, Srila Prabhupada. The treasure, the real treasure, is Krishna. Prema Dan. The greatest treasure is loving devotional service to Krishna. Narahari Tirtha was a king. Even though he was sannyasi, he was living as a sannyasi in heart, but he had all the treasures and the royalty of kings. In the world today, where democracy and dictatorship and all these things are very much ruling over capitalism and communism and socialism, it's hard to dream of what kings used to have in those days. They had incredible wealth at their disposal. And here was the royal treasury. And Narahari Tirtha only wanted one thing. Ram. He had no interest in anything else. And he was willing to deal with all this other wealth, power, prestige of this world, but it was only for the pleasure of Ram. Srila Prabhupada gives us the example of a lotus flower. A lotus flower, even if it is growing in a very muddy, polluted pond of water, the lotus leaf remains always completely pure because its roots are somewhere in a very deep place. So similarly, when we root our goal in life, sam siddhir hari tosha, in pleasing Guru and Krishna, then even if we have to live as a householder with a husband or a wife, children, a job, somehow or other trying to get food and trying to get rent paid or buying a house, or a king, or a brahmachari living in an overcrowded little ashram, matras parashastu konte yasitos na sukadukata agama payanonat yas tams titiksvasha bharata. These dualities of happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, heat, cold, they come and go like the winter and summer seasons. A devotee tolerates them all. And what does it mean to tolerate it? It doesn't mean you're not physically affected by it. It means you carry on with your purpose, your service, whatever may be. Like a lotus flower. Whether we're dealing with wealth or whether we're dealing with poverty, whether we're swamis or kings, our purpose is just to please Krishna and serve Krishna according to the situation. King Bahulaswa was the king of Mithila, descendant of Janak, the father of Sita. And Shrutadev was a simple Brahmin who just lived in a straw hut. And they both offered Krishna, when he came there with Narada Muni and other sages, the best they had. One offered him a jeweled throne and one offered him a straw cushy grass mat. One offered him the most fine foods on gold plates, and the other offered him some little
chipped rice he had begged on a leaf plate.
For Krishna, he tasted, he heard, he saw everything completely equal.
There was so much variegation in these two people, but Krishna was seeing that their only intent was to please him. That's bhakti.
That's love. And that's the real treasure of life. And it's that treasure that Srila Prabhupada traveled the world to give people. When he saw the wealthiest city in the world at the time, Manhattan Island of New York City, he was thinking how much poverty, because they don't have that jewel of Krishna. They don't have that treasure of love of God. Nothing else really matters. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him on their first meeting, the only real problem in this world is people have forgotten their eternal loving relationship with God, and therefore they're mad after trying to find that pleasure in so many other things and creating so much anxiety and conflict. Yoga means to unite our own consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness, with Krishna, through love and devotion. And to unite each other on the basis of that principle, the principle of reality. That is real wealth.
There's that famous saying, you can tell how rich you are by counting how many things you have that money cannot buy.
Money cannot buy love. Love of God.
Inner peace and happiness that can only be accessed when love of God is awakened.
Therefore, that is the real treasure, the real wealth, and the real purpose of our human life. And when we aspire for that, and just try to please Krishna in whatever situation we may be in, we become like that lotus flower, even in the muddy situations of this world. And Krishna sees us that way. We have come on this yatra to help each other to be inspired for this purpose, to refocus our attention, because we really need that. There are so many distractions in this world. The distractions within our own minds due to our past conditionings. In our earlier life in this body and in previous births, so many samskaras or tendencies we have accumulated. So many prejudices, so many likes and dislikes, loves and hates on this world of dualities. So many conceptions and misconceptions. Especially who we are and who others are. And so much greed and lust, the tendency for envy and anger and arrogance. And in Kali Yuga, there's limitless propaganda to fuel the fire of our distractions.
So how to keep focused on the real purpose of life, the real treasure? Love for Krishna. Prabhupada was asked, what pleases you most? Srila Prabhupada said, when you love Krishna. That pleases him most. So in this way, these yatras are a wonderful facility, a tradition. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the great saints, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they have all inspired these pilgrimages. In fact, in every great religion, there is holy pilgrimages. It is to come together in a setting where we can put all of these distractions aside and just become one in purpose. Whether it's two people or whether it's 4,500 people, to focus our attention that our real goal of life is to connect with that treasure of pleasing Krishna, of being the servant of the servant of the servant, of loving Krishna. And especially in this age of Kali, that treasure, the key to access it is in the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called this Harinam Kirtan the prime benediction for all humanity. Kaler dosani de rajanasti he kumahanguna kirtanat eva krishnasya mukta sangha paramprache. Even in this Kali Yuga, which is an ocean of faults, there is one great benediction that simply chanting the names of Krishna, one can attain the perfection of liberation. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us how we must chant the names of Krishna. In the spirit of being the servant of the servant of the servant to please Krishna. In a spirit of being humble like a blade of grass, trinadapi sunichena, taror ibasehishnana, tolerant, forgiving, like a tree. Amanina manadena, without false prestige, to offer respects to others. Kirtaniya sadahari. Then we could taste the nectar of the holy names. We have come on this wonderful yatra to develop relationships, to inspire one another, to take very seriously the gift of the chanting of the holy names, the association of devotees, and the opportunity to serve. Devotional service. And it is our hope and our prayer that these relationships that we have connected with during this yatra are relationships that we will remember, and the experiences, the focus that we have gained here, we bring it into our life. Because this is our last gathering during this particular yatra. But actually, as we leave the pandal this evening, the next yatra begins. Because life is a pilgrimage. Life is a journey back home, back to Godhead. And this yatra, it's not meant just to enjoy and then go back to our life. This yatra is meant to, as some devotees say, charge our batteries, our spiritual batteries.
to infuse us, to enthuse us, to focus us. The purpose of the yatra is actually how it transforms us so that when we go from the yatra into the world that we live, we have greater determination. We have a stronger focus in our real purpose of life. We have a deeper appreciation for what Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas have given us.
So the real yatra begins when the real yatra ends. In the sense that a devotee doesn't eat prasad just because it tastes good, even though it does taste good. A devotee, especially when Gauranga Prabhu and Radhabala Prabhu and their team cooks this incredible prasad. Now, we're all just eating and we're sitting, but they wake up like at 2 a.m. to being cooking every day. And what it takes to cook for 4,500 people, all the pots, and they developed a whole, Bamsidhar Prabhu developed a whole railway system for these gigantic pots and these gigantic cookers, and they have these big trucks that they're loading and sending from the eco village in Mumbai and all these different places, and they send it all the way to Hampi, and they set up a whole kitchen cooking 8 preparations for each for lunchtime for almost 5,000 people, and getting it on time every day. Incredible. Huge fires blazing and pots and big paddles being stirred. Amazing. And then all of you and me, we're thinking, now from Hampi we have to take a bus or we have to drive all the way to Udupi. I know it was inconvenient, and I'm sorry about that. But you know what the kitchen had to do? I was with my dear godbrother, Shesha Prabhu, after the last event in Hampi, and we went back to the kitchen. And they had all these big trucks and gigantic pots and gigantic cookers, and some of the cookers you can't even move because they're so big. Most of the cookers that they have to build them here with bricks and mud for gigantic pots that are hundreds of gallons. It's incredible. And they have to pack it all up at night, drive all night long, set it up early in the morning, and have lunch for all of us when we get off the buses all tired. And I've been watching how this prasad is being cooked over the years. I've never heard any of them complaining. This is too much. Somebody else should do. They're just laughing and stirring and cooking and and everything's so nice because they're doing it with love. And interestingly, these people who are driving all night and planning the menus and planning the quantities and cooking it all, it takes months to organize it and prepare it. Not a single one of them is paid one penny or one paisa. They're just doing it to please the Vaishnavas. And we're happy eating it, but they're even happier going through the sacrifice of making us happy. So when we come in the yatras and we see this, and then there's the people who have to organize the hotels and organize the buses and organize the security and organize so many other things that's going on. Even the finances, because we're in this world. Some of these devotees, they're really working practically without sleep throughout the whole yatra. And there's always things going not exactly right that they have to be constantly dealing with and fixing. And some months they're spending helping with the organization, the accommodations, the travel. And they do it as a service. And the interesting thing is it's never hard to find people to do it, because everyone who does it loves to do it. They get nothing but the opportunity to feel the true joy of seva. The Mula Ram, the Udupi Krishna in the Chandan lump, the Mula Ram in the treasury of the Kalinga kings, the real treasure of life, we find it in the simple spirit of pleasing the Lord and his devotees. And many of you have come from so many different places, and some of you, your health is not so good. We have people from China and Russia and Iran and America and France and Africa and so many places, so many parts of India. Whatever difficulties, it's what makes the yatra so beautiful, is that we see examples among each other of people who really have this focus. Some Siddhir Hari Toshanam, on pleasing Lord Hari. So let us all very enthusiastically offer our gratitude to all those devotees who have given their lives, Sanat Kumar Prabhu and Hare Krishna Prabhu and Radha Kund Prabhu and Baladev Prabhu and Gauranga Prabhu and Radha Bala Prabhu and so many others. How they have, Shamananda Prabhu, they have just given so much of their life with joy. And that's part of the yatra, to see what real bhakti is among each other, and to imbibe that in our own hearts. So let us very enthusiastically clap and chant Hari Bol and everything else to thank these devotees. All you Hanumans have just been embraced by Ram for your great surrender. Thank you. And of course, so many names I didn't speak, because there's so many devotees who have done so much. And they don't even want credit. They just want to see your smile. And to see that you're smiling because you're feeling Krishna in your lives. To inspire one another to surrender to Krishna, to love Krishna, to remember Krishna. That is the deepest love that we can show for each other. And the body is a medium by which we can express that love for pure devotional service. So I am so grateful to all of you for allowing me, as small and insignificant and useless as I am, to sit here and speak to you every day. And you're so patient that you listen. At least I think you're listening. It's quite incredible. I'm so grateful to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada taught us that he saw every devotee as a representative of his Guru Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada personally spoke like that. And if Prabhupada saw every devotee as the representatives of his Guru Maharaj, how should we learn to see each other? Thank you very much.